The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, those were some great games to start the Thanksgiving Day weekend. Two of them were really good. I think the last two were kind of weak, but the first two were pretty good, especially one of them because, you know, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I was real excited about the results of one of these games. So let's get started with the Green Bay Packers versus the Detroit Lions, and the Packers just demolished the Lions. I mean, the score was close. The Packers got the win 31-24, but overall, it was all Packers all day. Jordan Love had another phenomenal game, went 18 for 30, 234 yards and 4 touchdowns. And Wicks, he had 94 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then Micah Parsons had 2.5 sacks on the day. And it was just all Green Bay. Their defense was getting at Detroit. It kind of felt like every time Detroit was getting back in it, the next drive, the Packers offense would either score a field goal or a touchdown. And then on the following drive, the Packers defense would just step it up. And it just kind of felt like every time the Lions would make some headway, that the Packers would just come right back and punch them in the mouth. And this is just another big win from the Packers. And just another questionable loss from the Lions, because you're like, they kind of had it. It's not like they played a terrible game, but it's just the Packers just played much better than them. Then we had the Kansas City Chiefs at the Dallas Cowboys, and the Dallas Cowboys actually dominated the Kansas City Chiefs in this one. They got the win 31-28, but I mean, the Cowboys pretty much were riding pretty the majority of this game. I mean, it was really quite shocking, as a matter of fact, how much we actually dominated the Chiefs in this one. Dak went 27 for 39, 320 yards, and 2 touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb bounced back from his bad game last week with 112 yards and a touchdown. But just another all-around great team performance from the Cowboys. I mean, Kevontae Turpin made this great play where George Pickens, he actually had a fumble in the red zone. And Turpin was just right there to pick it up. So even little plays like that the Cowboys were making, the defense was actually stepping up when they could. Of course, Mahomes was just doing what he could to will his team to any type of win. But the Cowboys were just lucky to hold on to the ball, get the first downs toward the end, and then just ride off into the sunset. But it was just an excellent game from their offense. And the defense has just looked actually really solid in these last three games. And the Cowboys are actually kind of there. They're making a little bit of a run. They've got a ways to go, but it was nice to see them not only win three games in a row, but two of those three games were against the last Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. And it was also nice to ruin Patrick Mahomes' homecoming, because if you don't know, he is from the Dallas area, and that was his first time playing in Dallas. Had his homecoming, had his whole family there, and Dak was there just to shit all over his day, and it was great. But I will say, though, Mahomes was making some plays. Man, there was like a third down play where they just should have had him behind the sticks, and he, of course, was just able to run it out and just throw up a prayer and just connect as he always does. But the Cowboys were actually able to get the solid win, and it was a great thing to see, at least in my opinion. Then we had the Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens, and welcome back Joe Burrow, because the Bengals stomped the Ravens 32-14. Joe Burrow came back from his injury and went 24 for 46, 261 yards and 2 touchdowns. And not only was it a nice game from Burrow, but this Cincinnati Bengals defense, it is the worst defense in the league, and they did not play like that last night. As a matter of fact, they had a turnover in the red zone. They were really just making things difficult for Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson hasn't even thrown for a touchdown in 3 straight games or 4 straight games. It's a pretty bad run for him right now. So, the Bengals, that's just the thing, though, about those division matchups, is even though the Bengals aren't having that good of a season and the Ravens are kind of on the upswing right now, The Bengals came right in and took a swing, and they did not miss. But the Ravens, they looked completely disjointed in the majority of this matchup. I mean, they had about two good drives, and other than that, it was all Bengals all night. And then today, Black Friday, had another Black Friday game, and it was the Chicago Bears at the Philadelphia Eagles. And I don't know, man. Like I just said, Cowboys, they need to keep winning to get into the playoffs, but they also need some help, and some helpful things come from the Chicago Bears today by the Bears kicking the crap out of the Eagles. This was not a close game. I mean, the Eagles, they do not look good on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Saquon Barkley, he's only at like 700 rushing yards, I think, right now in the season. And he's just has had no explosive plays at all. This was another just really weird game from Jalen Hurts. He just was off. He was just throwing some really bad. He threw a couple bad interceptions. And just overall, even the tush push did not work. He actually fumbled on the tush push. So this just is not looking good for the Eagles. So if they keep losing, Cowboys keep winning, that division could be for the taking. But still holding my breath. You know, the Eagles got to keep losing. Cowboys got to keep winning. But the Bears, they keep on winning, and they got the win 24-15. And they got it all done on the ground today by both of their running backs. Swift had 125 yards and a touchdown, and Monongai had 130 yards and a touchdown. First time since 1985 that the Chicago Bears have had 200-yard rushers in the same game. And really just an overall, it was actually pretty much dominated by the Bears. It's not like the Bears really trounced them and really were just out of their minds scoring, but it was really just, they just kept plugging away. The defense kept doing what they needed to do. And like I said, the Eagles offense does not look good right now, and I'm pretty fucking excited about it. So let's get into the rest of the week 13 and also my head-to-head matchup with the homie Simon Ruvalcaba. Last week, I went 11-3 to bring my season total to 117 wins and 60 losses. And Simon went 9-5 to bring his total to 115 wins and 62 losses. So he's two games behind, but we did have one different pick this week, and that was in the Cincinnati Bengals-Baltimore Ravens game. He picked the Bengals, I picked the Ravens, so he did gain a game on me. I went 1-3 over the weekend. He went 2-2, so we didn't fare that well. But let's see how the rest of week 13 is, what matchups we've got going on here, beginning with the San Francisco 49ers at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Niners are a 6.5-point favorite. And, you know, I'm really looking at this Browns defense. I mean, this Browns defense has really just kept them in it every single game, and this Niners team is just weird. Even though they're getting some wins, they haven't really dominated in any way other than Christian McCaffrey. And then you had Brock Purdy come out, and he practically wanted to give last week's game away. So if he plays like that against this Cleveland Browns defense, I feel like things might be a little bit different. Cleveland's offense, not so good, so I feel like that's going to be very helpful to the Niners in this one. But the Cleveland defense, I feel like, is definitely going to keep them in it. I wouldn't be shocked if Myles Garrett has another sack or three in this one. He is well on pace to just obliterate the single-season sack total record. He's at 18. The record is 22.5, so he is almost there. So expect him to have, like I said, at least 1-3 sacks in this game. So look out, Brock Purdy. But with that being said, I still think the Niners are the better team. I feel like this is a game they should win because Cleveland's very similar to the Panthers where, you know, Cleveland's got a really good defense and they might get some takeaways. But if those takeaways don't translate into touchdowns, I don't know if their offense is going to be able to score. So I've got the Niners winning a close one, 23-16. Then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Tennessee Titans. Right now the Jaguars are a 6.5-point favorite and the Titans are just such a god-awful team. There is nothing good to say about this team. Jaguars, a very weird team. They haven't really been able to catch their stride at all this season. They've had good games, but they've also had really weird games, and I just don't really know what to expect from them. But even so, the Titans are so terrible, but the Jaguars are a lot better, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Wouldn't be shocked if their defense actually causes a turnover or two and maybe even has a touchdown to go with it. But even so, doesn't matter how it's going to happen. I've got the Jaguars winning 28-13. Then we have the Houston Texans at the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, the Colts are a 3.5-point favorite, and Daniel Jones is actually going to be playing with a broken fibula. So there's that. But Jonathan Taylor, he's He's been the dude all season, and it's shown in their couple of losses that they've had this season. If he does not do well, then that's when they lose. Houston's defense, though, even though Houston is not playing really good on the offensive side of the ball, they are playing really good on the defensive side of the ball. As a matter of fact, they are getting at the quarterback. They are knocking balls down. They are causing turnovers. It is a really, really ferocious defense. It's just, unfortunately, their offense just cannot score. It does look like C.J. Stroud's going to be back in this one, but I don't think that matters at all. As a matter of fact, I feel like since the Colts are coming off of a loss, a tough loss, I feel like they're just going to bounce back in this one, and I feel like they're going to get right back on track, and Jonathan Taylor is going to have a nice game, and I've got the Colts winning 27-14. Then we have the New Orleans Saints at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 5.5-point favorite. These are two just garbage teams playing for absolutely nothing, so it should actually translate into a pretty decent game. I really basically am only taking Miami in this one because they're at home and because the Saints are slightly better than the Titans. I know I'm talking about the Miami and the Saints game, but it's like the Saints are about as bad as the Titans are. And so I kind of feel like when you look at the rosters between the Titans and the Saints, it's like I feel like the Saints might have like one notch better than the Titans, but it's just difficult to choose. And then also on top of that, there's going to be no Alvin Kamara in this game, and that's the Saints' only bright spot. And even so, he hasn't even really had that great of a season, but I feel like Miami is good enough to get this win, so I've got Miami winning 21-14. Then we have the Atlanta Falcons at the New York Jets. Right now, the Falcons are a 2.5-point favorite. This is another game where it's the Who Cares Bowl, where both teams are playing for absolutely nothing. Other than draft position next year, so it might benefit the Jets to lose in this one. Even so, I don't think it matters. I feel like they don't have a good team. They don't have a good roster. The Falcons don't really have a good team either, but they have a little bit more spark. You know, they have Bijan Robinson, who's always capable of busting off a big run and just racking up the points. So I just kind of feel like Atlanta's going to roll in this one 27-10. Then we have the Arizona Cardinals at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right now, the Buccaneers are a 2.5-point favorite, and it is looking like Baker Mayfield's going to play in this one. He did sprain his AC joint in his shoulder, and it really affected his play towards the halftime in last week's game, and he didn't play in the second half of the game. Arizona, they are just a bad team. They just don't play good, consistent football in any way, shape, or form. And Tampa Bay, they are a good team. It's just they've suffered a couple of losses along the way, and I just kind of feel like they're ready for a win. That's kind of why I feel like Baker's ready to go out there and play, because not only that, it's like they can't lose their grip on their division. Even though the Panthers are not a good team, the Panthers are still on their ass. So even they just really can't afford any losses right now, especially in the NFC. It's really convoluted, right? Or really crunched up right now in the NFC, especially for the playoff run right now. And so Tampa really needs to win. And that's why I just think Baker's like, bitch, I got to play. So I have Tampa Bay bouncing back in this one, 31-21. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Carolina Panthers. Right now the Rams are a 9.5-point favorite. And, you know, the Rams are rolling right now. They're playing great football. But with that being said, you know, it's really difficult. It kind of feels like every single team that starts to get on a roll kind of runs into a wall. But the Rams are a really good team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They have so many veterans, so many playmakers, and just so many consistent guys out there that it's just really, you look at the Panthers and there's really not a lot of consistency. They do play really close games, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They don't really have any issues, but I just kind of feel like they're running into a buzzsaw in this one. And I feel like the Rams are going to have no issues in this one, and I feel like the Rams are going to roll 28-13. Then the afternoon games, we have the Minnesota Vikings at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the Seahawks are a 9.5-point favorite, and J.J. McCarthy not expected to play in this one. Does he have a concussion, I believe? I can't remember what his injury is, but regardless, he's got an injury. I don't think it matters because J.J. McCarthy has had such a terrible season that it just kind of feels like the Vikings are just circling the drain themselves. They really haven't found any footing at all on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Justin Jefferson's been pretty much non-existent, and that says a lot because he's one of the top five receivers in this game for sure, and he's just dwindling. He's just basically in offensive purgatory this year. It has nothing to do with him. It's just the offense has just been so bad. Defensively, they're still able to tread water and keep things close for the offense, but then the offense just gets too far away and the turnovers start causing too many issues. And this is not a team you want to do that against, especially the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, the Seahawks defense is really good. They love to cause turnovers. They love to get at the quarterback. And I can't even remember the quarterback's name who's going to be starting for the Vikings this week. So I just kind of feel like it's going to be a long day for the Vikings. As a matter of fact, when I made this the score prediction, J.J. McCarthy hadn't been, they hadn't taken him out of the game yet. Or I mean, they said they didn't know if he was going to be out or not. And so I have the score as 23-14, but I wouldn't be shocked if Seattle runs away with it a little bit more now that they have nobody Magoo starting at quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. But I do have the Seahawks winning regardless of what the score is going to be, 23-14. Then we have the Buffalo Bills at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now the Bills are a 3.5-point favorite. And the Bills are just another team where you're like, they were a Super Bowl front runner. And I look at them and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they've got what it takes. They definitely have the defense. They definitely have the great quarterback in Josh Allen. They definitely have the running game with Cook. It's just those receivers. Their receivers are extremely inconsistent. And then you could tell Josh Allen starts to panic once they start dropping passes or just play their inconsistent football. Then he starts running instead of trying to let routes develop and plays develop. You could just tell it's starting to get to him. And Pittsburgh, on the other hand, it does look like Aaron Rodgers is going to play in this one. He does have a fractured wrist, but it's not his throwing hand. So it's more of a pain tolerance thing rather than a throwing thing. But he's definitely going to be playing. And I just kind of feel like this is actually going to be a defensive battle. I kind of feel like both quarterbacks are going to have long days. I feel like both defenses are going to make it a struggle for both of them. I kind of feel like it's going to be a slow-moving game where I wouldn't be shocked if both ground attacks are what it takes. And with that being said, I just kind of trust Buffalo a bit more in this one, even though, I mean, they have not played any type of consistent football, but the Steelers not looking too great now either. But to me, this is kind of a coin toss game as well. I'm leaning towards Buffalo. Just because, actually, when I made my pick at the time, I didn't know if Aaron Rodgers was playing. Now that Aaron Rodgers is playing, I kind of want to switch. But, you know, when I don't usually like to switch my pick. It usually doesn't work out anyways. And it's just kind of stupid to do that. So I'm leaning towards Buffalo for some odd reason in this one. I've got Buffalo winning 24-21. I just mostly feel like their offense is a little bit more consistent. But Pittsburgh's starting to show up just a little bit. But we'll see what happens in this one. Then we have the Las Vegas Raiders at the Los Angeles Chargers. Right now, the Chargers are a 9.5-point favorite. The Raiders just fired their offensive coordinator, so they are just having a terrible season. It kind of feels like there's a bunch of teams who are in playoff contention, and then there's about five teams who are just god-awful, and the Raiders are one of those god-awful teams. The Chargers are one of the teams that are actually in playoff contention, so they definitely need this win. But they really haven't played any type of consistent football. Offensively, they don't have an identity. Defensively, they play pretty well, but what are they like great at? Really, not much. The Raiders, though, are just bad. And I just kind of feel like lucky for the Chargers, they're playing the Raiders. The Raiders have nothing to play for other than a better draft pick next year. So it actually benefits them to lose, even though they're probably, I don't expect the players on the field to not play, but the Raiders have just been straight trash, and the Chargers actually have something to play for. They have the better roster. They have the better players, and I just feel like the Chargers are going to win this one, but I don't think it's going to be a runaway. It is a division matchup, and I feel like the Raiders are going to come to play, and like I said, the Chargers haven't really showed out in any game this season, so I've got the Chargers winning a close one, 23-17. Then the Sunday night football matchup is the Denver Broncos at the Washington Commanders. Right now, the Broncos are a 6.5-point favorite. Jaden Daniels not expected to play in this one, but they do get Terry McLaurin back at the wide receiver position, which they definitely need, especially against this Denver Broncos defense. This defense has been so good. This defense is exactly why this Denver Broncos team wins. They have enough offense to get the job done, but their defense just keeps grinding, keeps them in it, and just makes sure that they do their job to just keep the offense in it. And then the offense just does their job, and they just go out there and make the plays, mostly in the fourth quarter. I don't know how long you can keep riding that into the playoffs, but they keep doing it. And it's working out for them, so there's really no issues there. And then it's just Washington is just not – they have not – played good football at all. They really haven't had a great game. They haven't really played. They're another team that has zero identity on offense, on defense, on anything. They just are not a good team. They're just one of those teams that's kind of floundering. Sometimes they'll get a win. Sometimes they'll get a loss. And I just kind of feel like the Broncos, even though it kind of feels like the Broncos might be creeping up on a loss here pretty soon, because they are on, what, like a 9-8, 9 game winning streak right now. So you kind of feel like that team's due for a loss at some point. I don't think it's going to come this week, just because Washington is just not a good team. And Washington really doesn't have a lot to play for, whereas Denver, they want to keep on winning because they got this division locked up. But with that being said, you know, any kind of loss along the way here, and then it's like maybe the Chiefs get rolling, maybe the Chargers get rolling, but keeping a nice distance between everybody else is what the Broncos want. And they're playing for that first overall seed as well. That's another thing that they're going to need as well. Because, I mean, coming to Denver, that ain't easy to come and play in the playoffs. So definitely want to be there. But I've got the Broncos winning a close one, 21-13. All right, moving on to the NBA and the week that was the NBA. And before I get started with the week that was, I got to say, the NBA has really fucked shit up. For a fan who regularly watches the NBA, I have no idea on a nightly basis what fucking channel or streaming network or what the fuck game is even on. I was even pissed off because, you know, I live in Austin, so I get all the Spurs games. Or I'm supposed to get all the motherfucking Spurs games. And I go to watch a Spurs game, I want to say about a week or two ago. And it was one of the NBA Cup games, and apparently those are only on Amazon Prime. Not even the local motherfuckers get the Spurs games. And I'm like, wait a second. You mean we don't even get the local shit, don't even get these games? So that pissed me off, number one. But number two, like I said, the last couple of weeks I keep going, oh, so I know TNT no longer has games anymore. Last year was their last year with it, but NBC does now. But it's like, God, some are on Netflix, some are on Prime, some are on NBC, some are on NBA TV, some are on ESPN. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, y'all are not making it easy for a motherfucker to try and watch some basketball. So y'all might want to figure that shit out. I mean, I know this is just the way it's all going anyways, but it's just, Jesus Christ, I have no idea. But I was most pissed off about not being able to watch that Spurs game, because I'm sorry, I live in Austin. I'm supposed to get every single Spurs game. It should not even be a question. I don't care if it's Prime exclusive. I should be getting a Spurs game because I get every motherfucking Spurs game. But I don't know, man. The NBA has really fucked up trying to watch a game this year, and there's a lot of good basketball going on. So let's get right into it on Monday night. The teams that are winning kept on winning on Monday. The Detroit Pistons kept on winning. They got their 13th win in a row. They beat the Indiana Pacers 122-117. Cade Cunningham had 24 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists. And Jalen Duran, man, he's continuing his amazing season with 17 points and 12 rebounds. These two are a dynamic force, and especially Duran, he is just dominating the paint and just really propelling himself from last year to this year to a whole other level. Then the Toronto Raptors also kept on winning. They won their 8th in a row over the Cleveland Cavaliers, a legit team, 110-99. Brandon Ingram had a huge game, 37 points, 7 rebounds. And then Barnes had 18 points and 11 rebounds. And it's just shocking to continue to see these Raptors win on that type of level like that. Then another team that keeps on winning, the Miami Heat. They beat the Dallas Mavericks 106-102. This was Tyler Hero's first game back of the season. And guess what? He hit the game-winning shot, added in 24 points and 7 rebounds in this game. And the Miami Heat, another team that keeps on winning. And then the other team that keeps on winning, the Denver Nuggets, beat the Memphis Grizzlies 125-115. The triple-double machine showed up. Nikola Jokic had 17 points, 16 assists, and 10 rebounds. Watson had a career game with 27 points, and then Jamal Murray added in another 29 points and 8 assists, so the Denver Nuggets kept it rolling. Then on Tuesday night, the Lakers demolished the Clippers 135-118, and this was just showing you what the big three can do here in this one. Luka had 43 points, 13 assists, and 9 rebounds. LeBron had 25 points, and Austin Reeves had 31 points, so Big night from the Lakers in that one. Oh, by the way, I believe that was one of those dumbass NBA Cup games that was exclusively only on Prime, which I do have Prime, by the way. I can watch it. It's annoying trying to figure out what fucking channel all these goddamn games are on. Like, figure it the fuck out. And trust me, they don't make it easy to figure it out, by the way. I'm, like, searching through everything, and then by the time I find it, it's halftime and the game's practically over. Then on Wednesday, the Boston Celtics actually stopped the Detroit Pistons' winning streak. The Boston Celtics, who have had not a good season at all, which is not shocking because Jason Tatum's been injured all season. But they did get the win over the Pistons, 117 to 114. Brown had 33 points and 10 rebounds, and White had 27 points. So it was just a really solid game from the Celtics, probably really their best game of the season. The Pistons were right in it all the way up to the bitter end. It's just, you know, their winning streak was going to come to an end at some point. I'm sure they could start a new one here again, but it was just the Celtics were the ones to finally end that winning streak. Then the Toronto Raptors, though, they did not end their losing streak. As a matter of fact, they got win number 9 in a row over the Indiana Pacers, 97-95. Brandon Ingram had another monster game, 26 points, 8 rebounds. And then Barnes had another good game as well, 24 points, 10 rebounds. They're becoming a nice dynamic duo there up in Toronto. But I don't know. We'll see how long it lasts. I don't really believe in them, but it might last. You just never know. It's the Eastern Conference, and there's really nobody showing out other than the Detroit Pistons at this current point in time. The Knicks are doing pretty well as well, but I mean, the Toronto Raptors, this is ripe for the taking for them for sure. Then the Oklahoma City Thunder, the defending champs, they got their 10th win in a row over the Minnesota Timberwolves, 113 to 105, SGA monster game, 40 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and it's just this team, oh my God, they're better than last year, and they won the championship last year. That's all you got to say. They just are so good at every single way, shape, and form. And I'm a Lakers fan, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, are we going to be able to beat this team? I mean, I feel like we can. But in a 7-game series, they're going to make it real difficult, that's for sure. And then we had the Houston Rockets take down the Golden State Warriors, 104 to 100. Kevin Durant did not play in this one. You know, he's going up against his old team, the Warriors, but he didn't play in this one. But Reed Sheppard had the huge game for the Rockets, 31 points, 9 rebounds, in a very close, crazy matchup. Unfortunately, Steph Curry got injured in this one, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a crazy injury. It looks like he's only going to be out for a week. But even so, the Golden State Warriors definitely need him because he's been their dude. He's been carrying them so far. So definitely going to need him after once he gets back from this injury. All right, and moving on to MLB free agency is now off and running, and we actually have quite a few solid players out there. So this week I thought I'd highlight the top 5 MLB free agents that are available, still available, because actually Dylan Cease, he wasn't going to be in the top 5, actually. He probably would have been, you know, a couple players below. But he was one of the top free agents out there this year, and he actually ended up signing with the Toronto Blue Jays. So the Blue Jays coming off of their nice run this year and just make a nice little pickup with Dylan Cease. Even though he didn't have the greatest year with the Padres, he's still a really solid guy, and he's going to fit right in with that beautiful rotation up there in Toronto. But there are still 5 guys out there who are I want to actually say, you know, all 5 of them, it's kind of shocking that they're out there, but there's 2 where I'm like, especially number 2, I feel like the home team might want to sign them. So let's get into it. I'm just going to go 1 to 5. Because it's not really a major ranking or anything, or ranking that matters. It's really just the top 5 that really stood out to me for the MLB free agents this year. But like I said, these 5 are powerhouses, and they're definitely going to be franchise changers for sure for whoever signs or re-signs them. Beginning with number 1, Kyle Tucker. He, he had an up and down year this year in Chicago. This was his first year in Chicago. They traded for him in the offseason from the Astros. Kyle Tucker was projected to basically be the next guy with Houston, but for some reason they decided to trade him rather than sign him to an extension, which I just found completely weird, but that's just besides the point. So, you know, he was very consistent and really good down in Houston. And then this year with Chicago, it was more just injuries kind of took him out of the game. But when he was in the game, he was a difference maker. And I just feel like this is the top free agent that everybody's going to be going after. He is an offensive powerhouse, but he is also really solid in the outfield on the defensive side of the ball. So whoever gets him is getting an all-around player. He's a young player, too. So you're getting a guy who's probably going to be with your franchise for the next 7 to 10 years, depending on what goes on with the rest of his career. So Kyle Tucker, for sure, whoever gets him, I'm kind of shocked that the Cubs didn't re-sign him to an extension just yet. I mean, they're definitely in play for him. And, of course, the Dodgers are in play for them because, you know, the Dodgers don't have enough fucking hitters on their team. They need another one. But, I mean, a lot of teams are in play for Kyle Tucker. And like I said, whoever gets Kyle Tucker is getting a great all-around player. Then at number 2 on my top 5 MLB free agents available, Kyle Schwarber. And to me, I don't know how the Philadelphia Phillies would even consider letting Kyle Schwarber go. Kyle Schwarber has been probably the most consistent Philadelphia Philly since the day, can't remember, did they trade for him from the Nationals or sign him in free agency? Either way, since Kyle Schwarber has been with the Phillies, he has been exceptionally consistent behind the plate. One thing is for sure, that Kyle Schwarber comes up to bat, that he's almost always hitting a home run out of the park. He is right there in line with Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, the two MVPs when it comes to home runs. And he's a game changer. He really is. So to me, the Phillies should be the front runner. Like I said, I don't know how the Phillies have not signed this dude, but they better get on it. And if the Phillies don't get on it, well, somebody is getting a really damn good player, because Kyle Schwarber has been one of the most consistent hitters in this game. He's not bad on the defensive side of the ball as well. But it's really all about the home runs with Kyle Schwarber. And if I'm the Phillies, I'm re-signing this dude 100% tomorrow. And then at number 3 on my top 5 MLB free agents, I have Alex Bregman. You know, he just spent the last season with the Red Sox, mostly injury prone for the most part. But, you know, before that, he was the dude with the Houston Astros. Very consistent, won a couple World Series with them. And he's just another all-around player like Kyle Tucker, where he's going to deliver offensively, but he's also going to deliver defensively. He is one of the top tier shortstops in the game. So he's definitely going to get things done for you defensively. And even though he's an injury-prone guy, because that's been his thing over the last couple of seasons, I kind of feel like that's why the Astros were fine with letting him go. But it doesn't matter to me. Injuries are just something that can happen to every single player. And I just kind of, you know, that's not really an issue to me. I just kind of look at the player and look at what he's worth. And Alex Bregman is worth every damn dime that you give him. He is a very consistent player. And if he's going to a squad, like, say, like, for example, I don't know, maybe he signs with like a team like the Padres or even the San Francisco Giants, teams that have like younger rosters with up and comers. And then he's just kind of that veteran presence that you just need to add into it to play some great baseball, but at all, to also help develop these younger players on the run. Then at number 4 on my top 5 MLB free agents, Bo Bichette, who has been another top tier shortstop. Very, very consistent on the offensive side of the ball. Very, very shocked that the Blue Jays have not re-signed him yet. Just because he has been, him and Vlad have been the two cornerstones basically of this team for many years. They both came up with this team. And so I kind of feel like he's going to end up back with the Blue Jays. But if he doesn't, Bo Bichette is, it was difficult. I was going back and forth between he and Bregman. I really only put Bregman above him simply because Bregman's got the championship pedigree. But Bo Bichette is probably the better player. It's really a coin toss with the two of them, but I feel like Bichette's the younger one, so you're probably going to get a little bit more out of him. But even so, those are two top-tier guys. But Bichette, I expect him to re-sign with the Blue Jays, but even if he doesn't, you're getting a really damn good player, whoever signs him. And then rounding out the top 5 MLB free agents is Pete Alonso. Had a career year with the Mets. And basically, he bet on himself. because last year he was in the free agency pool, and he was, some people were interested, other teams weren't, and then the Mets were kind of like, hey, come back and play with us, we'll give you a little bit of money, and he was like, you know what, I will go back and play with the Mets, and not only did he come back and play with the Mets, he had a career year, really showed them what he's worth, really showed the rest of the league what he's worth, so if the Mets let him go, well, then that's on them, because whoever he goes to, and knowing him, he'll probably go to, like, if he don't sign with the Mets, he'll probably go sign with, like, the Yankees or one of their rivals just so he could shove it up their ass and get multiple home runs against them, because that's just what happens to the Mets. The Mets and the Knicks, they both do that, where it's like they have a hold of these really good players, and then they let them go, and then that player, every time they play them, they show out against them. So that's actually kind of what I'm expecting to happen. The Mets should re-sign him just because he's been a very consistent player for them. And I actually don't believe last year was like a fluke for Alonso. I just think he was really healthy. And I think it actually helped having Soto in the batting order with him, because it was really difficult to figure out, well, do we put Pete before him? Do we put him after him? Either way, you're good, because Pete's probably going to come up and bat and hit one out the park. So I think the Mets need to re-sign him. Just because the fan base really likes him too, but it really wouldn't be shocking if they don't re-sign him, and then if he ends up signing with like the Yankees and then kicks their ass every time he goes up against them. So that's just kind of what I see happening, because that would be typical Mets fashion. All right, y'all, enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.